Welcome to Paul Life Past and Present. This is your host, Eric Ortega. I have a story by Rosina Lasquez in which she speaks about leaving Warner's Hot Springs. It's the first part of the three stories that she tells about leaving Warner's. And, oh, well, here's a clip. You can tell from that clip, it's going to be a great story. I have a conversation with Paul Miranda. He runs the Peon Games tournament that occur in Paula. He runs both the Coupa Days Fiesta Games and the annual Powwow Games. And here's a sample of that conversation.
And Peon's kind of like the last kind of stronghold. Like, that, those are the hardcore traditionals that, I mean, at least the real Peon players are.
Well, those are great clips. Now I'm thinking that we might have time for a couple of bird songs here, so we're going to start it off with a bird song from the Inner Travel Bird Singers. Take it away, Inner Travel Bird Singers. Now that's the Inner Travel Bird Singers. Thank you again for their help in adding some songs to the show here. If we have time, we'll play another one at the end. So this story, the story of Leaving Warner's by Rosina Lasquez, comes out of the Bulawatam book, page 46. And, you know, when you listen to the story, you can hear the sadness as she speaks about the journey to Paula. They didn't know where they were going. And then she was only like, I think like 11 or 9 years old or something. So, you know, when you're 11 or 9, you really don't know where everybody's taking you. And so some of the adults didn't even know. But they didn't know where they were going. But they just knew that they had lost these court cases and they had to leave the area that they had inhabited for hundreds of years. And after they got to Paula, she was sent off to school. She had never been to school before, but it was her first time heading off away from the family. It turned out to be her first time she ever rode on a train. She didn't know what this big house was with wheels on it, and she talks about that in the story. She went on this train, and when she got to Riverside, she went on a different train. She said they called it a streetcar. And then she ended up at Sherman in Riverside. At that point, she didn't speak English. She talks about how this is where she actually learned to speak English. She learned all these other different things that she had never thought about before. And this is her story. And again, this is the first part of three stories that she tells about leaving Warner's. Kick back and listen to the beauty of the Copeno language as it's told in Potnahil.
Chimkusa,
Again, to thank the Lasquez family for their part in keeping these stories and tapes alive. I always have to thank Rosendo Lasquez for all the effort she did to produce these stories and preserve them. And again, go back to the saying that she did in her video that she put out so that her grandchildren will know. And now, hopefully because of this show, all the Cupeño grandchildren will know. Now let's go over to our conversation with Paul Miranda as he discusses his journey into the Peon Games. And in another show, he will speak a little bit about the tournaments themselves. But today, we're going to talk about just his journey into the Peon genre, how he got started, what got him there, and why he is where he's at now. But what can I say about Mr. Miranda? He teaches Kahuilla language. He also teaches the Cupeño language. He teaches that right here in Paula at the Paula Learning Center. He plays music via the guitar and sings bird songs. And when most people are asleep at night, kicking back or watching Letterman, he's running the Peon games in Paula and stays up till 8, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning to make sure that they're all done properly and according to form. So here's Paul Miranda.
Well, let's start off. How long have you been singing Peon, and who taught you and all that kind of stuff?
20 years, if not more. I had this project when I was like in kindergarten, maybe even first grade or second grade or something like that. You know, they sent out this kind of like family heritage thing. You got to go research your family, find out who you are. So I remember asking my mom, you know, where do I come from? What, you know, what am I? And, you know, a child doesn't think of those things.
Right.
I didn't live on the reservation at the time. We lived in Hemet. So I was at a Hemet public school. You know, like I said, a child doesn't think of these things. Like, I didn't, like, necessarily look at another child and be like, you're white, you're black, you're Mexican, I'm Indian. I didn't really think of any of that. It was just, we were just all kids. And so when I asked mom, she goes, oh, you're Indian. I was like, well, what's that? You know, and then she told me, well, you're Cupeño and Kahuilla. You know, my mom had to write it down so that way I knew what it was. I mean, I didn't know what my mom was or my dad was at the time. And then it wasn't much longer after that, like ever since I found out I was Indian and kind of realized how kind of special it was, you know, I always kind of took an interest to all these things. Kind of the first experience in any kind of like native tongue or songs in any form actually was Peon. It's kind of crazy because a lot of kids these days, the first things they get exposed to are bird songs. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing they grasp onto right away. But it was the opposite was for me. I grasped onto peon immediately. My brother Jason started playing with George and my cousin, our cousin Maurice Chacon, and our cousin Eddie Chacon. A couple other people up there from Kauai. So he started to learn to play with them. So I got to learn some of their songs first. And my brother would come home and, you know, I was young, so I idolized my brother, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he would be having these all these songs and stuff like that. And so I would listen to him and I would sing them, and then he would talk about all these different things about people shooting each other and coyotes and all these songs. And I was just really interested. I mean, it was almost like it was this whole other world. So that's how I kind of got an interest when I was like, you know, maybe 8 years old, maybe even younger. I honestly can't remember.
When did you start playing piano, or who did you play with?
My brother, he stopped playing with George Smith, and then he started playing over here with Leroy. Leroy Miranda, of course. So there was him, Kylie Perez, and Neville Tiger. That was kind of the team that they had had for quite a long time. And so those guys would always play and practice, and they'd always be practicing here in Paula. So I'd always be around. I mean, I was pretty smart, so I finished schoolwork early, and so I'd be done at like 4 o'clock or something like that. And my brother would be going to practice at like 5 or 6 o'clock, and my mom would usually let him take me because we weren't leaving Paula. Like I said, I would hang around it, and I learned all the songs, and then I would practice with them all the time. And it wasn't until I was like, I don't know, 13 or something like that, I think I played my actual first tournament. And that was down in Saboba, and I'm trying to recall who played exactly. I can't remember. well, obviously me and my brother Jason, but I can't remember who the other two that had played. Could have been Kylie and Evel. I honestly can't remember. But anyways, we had played 3 games and took the tournament. So my first tournament I played in, I won, which was pretty nice.
That'll get you hooked.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I remember though, it was an awful tournament though. They organized it horribly. They wanted to hold out and do some big kind of show the next day to, oh, these guys won the piano because it was their powwow, you know. And mm-hmm. So, you know, and so they didn't want to give us the prize money right away. And they kept telling us, oh, another half hour. So there we were waiting around all day on a Sunday after playing all night. We finished at like eight in the morning or something like that. And the last thing you want to do as a piano player is wait around for hours and hours on end. We didn't end up getting collecting our winnings till like 5 or 6 o'clock the next night.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't so much that we waited for the money, but the thing that got us really mad the most was my little niece, who was barely like not even 1 or 2 years old, my brother Jason's daughter, ended up getting a heat stroke because they kept telling us, oh, another half hour. So we were pretty mad about that. And I don't think we've actually ever played there since. Geez, that had to have been 15 years ago, maybe a little more. I can't remember exactly, something like that. But I remember, too, because I was so young, we had to ask all the other teams if it was okay.
If you played.
Yeah, if I played. So that's one of the things I always do, too, when I'm running tournaments, is if there's a minor team, I say, and I let the team know right immediately. I said, hey, well, it's up to all the captains, and if they're okay with it, that's fine. But if not, then, you know.
Well, I know there's a lot of stuff regarding peon, some of it mystical, some of it philosophical, where they actually sing the songs kind of trying to fog the other person, trying to, like, well, I don't want to say bewitch, but just kind of use their songs for power over the other group, the other team. And I know traditionally, from what I talked with Uni and stuff, mm-hmm. they would say that they didn't like playing against kids because that's what they were doing. You know, they were, mm-hmm. like, using their songs to put power on the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want that to happen to kids, or mm-hmm. they wouldn't be able to do it.
So. Well, there's lots of things with peon is, you know, and a lot of people don't follow on the, you know, these days, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the customs and traditions are going, you know, or people are choosing to not respect them and follow them. Which I try to, you know, if I know better, then I know better, and I don't, you know, I don't handle things a certain way. And if somebody tells me different, until someone tells me different, you know, which hasn't happened in a long time. I haven't gotten told off, thankfully. So I'm pretty glad about that.
Well, you know, they always say the best way to learn a game is to be in charge of it, you know, mm-hmm. and then people really put things to you, like they hold you to that standard and they question you and they mm-hmm. ask you questions. So it's really probably, in a lot of cases, the best way to learn is mm-hmm. either by teaching or being in charge of it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Playing it, you just kind of do what you're supposed to do. But, you know, when you're in charge of it, that's when questions come out.
And you know, I even have to question some players out there. I mean, I won't name anybody, but there's been a lot of crazy things that have happened. Like I said, the customs traditions are just they're just dying down, unfortunately. And Peon's kind of like the last kind of stronghold. Like that, those are the hardcore traditionals that. I mean, at least the real Peon players are, and I mean, the ones that are listening and hear this, they'll know what I'm talking about. And other ones, they might just be there scratching their head, and kind of not understanding what I'm saying. It's the hardcore people. They're the ones that play Peon, that really still truly believe a lot of the old ways. But like you were saying though about like kids, you know, like for example, pregnant women aren't supposed to be around because of all the things that the people throw back and the teams would throw back and forth at each other. Now, granted, saying that those people have power. Right. And again, some of those people that are scratching their heads, they might not know what I'm talking about. But like you know, some of the people like you had already mentioned, they'll know what I'm saying. But you know, they throw a lot of things back and forth at the other teams to confuse them and you know make them second guess themselves and all these other things. You know, it's not good for kids to be around that, especially really young ones. You know, once you're a certain age, it's not going to hurt you so bad. But like pregnant women aren't supposed to be around, you know, and kids, you know, like little babies, you know, they're so innocent, so pure. Like there's a lot of things people don't understand, you know, like for example, somebody was asking me about a cousin of mine who just had a kid. Like, oh, have you seen the baby? I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen him. Did you hold him? I'm like, no, no, I'm not supposed to hold them for like till at least he's a month old, you know, because they're so pure. You don't want to ruin them, right. You know. And not saying I'm bad, but
well, a lot of things get thrown in, and when you're around Peon games, a lot of things are thrown.
Exactly, in. Exactly.
When you're there. How long have you been coordinating Peon games, or what's the word for it?
I guess just running the games. I guess is, I don't know how to.
It's not Koyami, because you actually have Koyamis that are working for you as you're doing this. So,
well, the Koyamis, they're not necessarily working for me, but they're working for the teams. Very rarely do I ever have any Koyamis lined up. It's kind of funny because a lot of people ask me, like, "Well, how do you know how many teams are going to show up?" But I'm like, "I won't know until then," because, like I said, the Peon's one of those secret kind of things, you know. I mean, you might tell some family at home, I'm gonna play here, but it's not, you don't go out and broadcast it, you know. You don't put it on Facebook and
right.
Stuff like that. At least you shouldn't be, for anybody who's out there scratching their head. You know, you know, not like, hey, this Friday I'm gonna be playing Peon, or you know, it's not one of those things. It's everybody, the people who are gonna play, they already know they're gonna play, and they already know the drill. They're gonna be looking for the fires, and you know, meet around dusk, you know, anywhere between 7 and 9, start asking around, you know, even if you're at powwows, you know, the captains need to be asking the people, hey, do you know where they're having the games at? Like, the, you know, the people doing announcing and stuff like that, where to meet up at, that type of thing. You know, I've been running them for like, I think like 6 or 7 years now. You know, I say that because I think of a time like, it was a couple years ago for Koopa Days here, and there was a couple of women's teams. You know, they showed up, and, you know, one of the things that kind of gets to me is, you know, it doesn't happen with the men, but with the women and children, it happens. They'll only be, like, 3 people, and there's supposed to be 4 people playing. And they're like, well, how many people need to play? I'm like, you're supposed to already know this. You know, you don't come here for me to show you how to play.
Right.
And I had to get after one of them one time. They were like, well, our 4th person isn't here yet. And, I had done everything I could possibly do at that point to delay the women's tournament. I had started the boys and the girls. They were already playing. And I already started the men, which I usually start the men last. I told them there was like one or two of the captains because I knew somebody was waiting, you know, coming around. And then like they long story short, it was like 11:30. And then the other team decides to finally show up and think they're going to come and play. And I was like, no, come on. You can't be new to this, are you? Like, you should know what protocol is. You know, it's going to start by 9, 10, somewhere around there. Be there early. Be there like 8 o'clock. You know, when I go to run the games, I'm usually there or on site about 6 o'clock. And because I try to get, you know, some rest in beforehand, that way I'm not all tired later on. But that way, when I'm at 6 o'clock, I can start walking around, kind of seeing who the people are already know that it might be playing, and I ask them. And then as a courtesy, I tell them, hey, I'm going to go meet over here. And then I make announcements. You know, if it's at the powwow, we try to do them over the PA system. If it's at Koopa Days, it's a little rough, but everybody already knows that where the games are going to be at Koopa Days. It's right next to the Culture Center. And the merchants start clearing out, and when the time comes, I start calling, and you know, everybody has about 20 minutes before everything's about ready. already, you know? And it's usually never a problem. But again, it's just some of these people who are the ones probably out there scratching their head, you know, showing up with three people or whatever, you know? And there was even another team one time. It was over here at Pow Wow. These guys showed up. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And they thought they were just going to buy into the tournament right then and there after the championship game and then walk in and play the championship game for the championship money. And I was like, wait, what? No, man. You got to be kidding me, right? No, these guys, I'm like, come on, man. These guys, we drew for that hours ago. These guys already played. And luckily, it was an early tournament. So, I mean, I'm happy when the tournaments end early because I get to go home and sleep and enjoy my next day rather than just sleep all day. So anyways, yeah, so it was like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. And these guys thought they waited around this whole time, thought they were going to walk in, pay $200 to play the championship for the pot, which was big money, you know. And I was like, no. But I'm like, you know, if you guys want, you can feel free to challenge those guys and play them if you want, you know, put up money for money. Mm-hmm. And then they walked away. I know I learned right, and I don't know where some of these people learned. But, yeah, it was crazy.
Well, you know, it wasn't too long ago that there was some really strong traditional teams out there. That's where, you know, I talked to a lot of guys around here, you know, who taught them. And, you know, it usually goes back to the same, you know, four or five teams that mm-hmm. taught everybody around.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Pinto out there and Campo and Salgados and I can't think of all the names right now. But
Machenios,
right. Mm-hmm. All of them came from different areas and stuff. And they were the strong ones. They were mm-hmm. the strong ones that taught everybody, you know, at least in this area. Mm-hmm. I know up towards Morongo and stuff, there's other teams that way that didn't really teach too much down this way, but they at least played against people
mm-hmm.
from down here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things, too. When you're going to play against somebody, well, you kind of don't teach that person how to play, you know, mm-hmm. because you're going to play against them. So,
well, yeah, but I mean, there were some unspoken rules too. Like, for example, if I was playing on Team A, and all of a sudden I'm playing Team B, you know, I'm playing against Team A. You don't tell Team B what Team A is doing, you know, mm-hmm. unless there's like some absolute hatred you have for that team.
There's
now,
the reason you're not on Team A.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there'd be a lot of, we call them pickup teams, where, you know, there's loose guys hanging around that want to play. They don't necessarily have a team.
They got three guys.
And yeah, and somebody has three, like, you know, all, you know, the car stalled out or something. They can't make it. Their wife said no, you know. Long story short, they fell a guy or two short, and they're looking for another guy. There might be one of those pickup kind of guys who might be, you know, willing to play. And so they would pay their part and then play. But again, they wouldn't be asking the other teams, what are they doing? Yeah. It's kind of an unspoken rule. I mean, there's a lot of different things. It's not just you kneel down and just play. You know, a lot of the serious guys, they prepare weeks, if not even, I mean, a week, if not even weeks, up to a month before they're going to play a tournament. I know somebody had told me one time, like back in the old days, like the men, they would go out in the desert and they just wouldn't even talk to anybody. They would just wait out there until it was time to play.
And I understand some guys don't shake hands with each other either
mm-hmm.
because they feel like their power will be corrupted.
Well, there's certain things that couldn't happen. I mean, it's customary at the end to shake hands with the other team. But, you know, who knows? Somebody could be in a mood, you know. I'm trying to think, but I mean, yeah, I mean, there's certain things. I mean, people might put things on their hands and then they would shake them, or they might, not necessarily to put power over the other person, but they might put some on their hand to discourage the other person, you know, or okay. just discourage the other person's power.
I have a question about shooting.
Okay.
Say the opposing team is numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, left to right,
mm-hmm.
and you want to shoot. You want to shoot all the way to the left-hand side. So you're saying everybody has the white bone in the left and their right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's that shot?
Well, there's a couple of different shots. Let me see. Well, there's 7 different shots, I believe, if I'm counting them right. If you're going to call all one way or the other, you would call a thravo shot.
Bravo.
Yeah. So you would point left or right. I mean, it's really important what you say and then what you point. I mean, what you say goes first. But then what you point is kind of second. So if you think the opposing team has all their bones in one side, you would call a throttle shot. And again, for those of you who don't know, there's They play with coyote bones, and some teams play with deer bones as well, but it's traditionally coyote bones, and it's traditionally the hind legs of the coyote bone. And so you're going to have a white bone and a black bone, and what you're really looking for is the white bone, but you can call it either way, a white or a black. So if you're going to call all white, you would call a throttle shot left or right and point one finger that way. But if you're going to call for blacks, you would point two fingers, and you would say weta, and say point left or point right. People might even say like weta condos as well, I believe. And then it kind of just moves on to where you're pointing after that. So like the next kind of easiest shot to explain over the air would be in the middle. So that would be a meta grande if you were to point one finger, and that you would think all the guys are hiding their white bones, hiding towards the middle. So that's a meta grande. But then if you were to point two fingers and say weta grande, that's all the guys are pointing the black bones into the middle.
So what over to the outside.
Mm-hmm. And then the kind of tricky kind of shot to explain a little bit is a chico shot. So a meta chico or a weta chico. And like, again, that's one finger or two fingers. One finger meta, two fingers weta. So if you were to say a meta chico and point left or right. Yeah. Well, like, let's just say, for example, you were to point left. A meta chico, it's not necessarily in the middle, but it's not all the way to the left either. So it's in between the two guys to the left, to the furthest. To the, yes, between one and two. Everybody would be pointing, hiding their bones towards that finger between those two guys. So it's either the white bone or the black bone. If you were to look from left to right, number one, two, three, and four, your number one would have his white bone in his left hand, and everyone else would have it in their right.
And that's what you're shooting.
Mm-hmm. And then you could call that on either side, left or right. And again, with the two fingers, weta would just be the opposite. It would be the black bones. So again, if you were to shoot a weta chico to the left, and again, numbering from left to right, one, two, three, and four, the first person would have the black bones, calling a weta chico shot, would have them in his left hand, and everyone else would have it in his right.
Okay.
And those are the shots that get kind of tricky, because somebody might say meta chico, but not point correctly, or they'll point in the middle. So when I'm going mean, I always like to clarify the shots before I call it, because it's not what the person says, it's what the Quimi says.
Right.
Then I look bad if I mess it up. Mm-hmm. And that could turn an entire game.
Right.
That's the last thing I want to do.
Well, let's see, PO games. Well, who won this last one? It was Boko and Anthony Smith.
Yep. Bucko Allen and or Lawrence Allen, to those of you who don't know his real name. I had to, you know, ask him the other day to actually confirm.
So who's Anthony Smith?
I believe he's from Kuya. I might be mistaken, though.
Okay.
That's what everybody was saying.
And they had a good time playing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I believe Emil Sanchez was playing on the team as well. And I don't know the other guy. Emil's another familiar face. A lot of you probably know him. See him around, so.
From Paula.
But he lounges around here quite often.
Yeah. He goes where the fun is. And,
that's for sure. He's always helped me out with the tournaments. You know, he's always around Koi Main if he's not playing. So I got to say that. He's.
Mm-hmm. So he knows the protocols and stuff, or as much as anybody could his age.
Mm-hmm. A lot better than a lot of other people that are out there, you know, showing up with two guys wanting to play at like 2 in the morning.
You know, how did you get to be in charge of these things? You showed up.
Yeah. I got thrown into my hands.
And now after 6 years, I guess it's yours. I mean, expectations are there already.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, no one's ever complained. There's never been any big... You know, no big fights or anything like that, you know. And usually, generally with Pion, it's pretty laid back. And, you know, running it isn't hard. It's just once you just getting started. Pion's the hardcore traditionals. The ones that know how to play, they're gonna know how it's done. And then if something's not done right, they're going to speak up immediately. Mm-hmm. and say it then and there. Before I go, Eric, I just want to say hi to my friend Steve and Sam. They're out here working at the moment. And then... of course, my mom and the rest of my family, my brothers and everybody. So
this is Eric Ortega of Paul Life Past and Present, getting ready to sign off. If you have any questions, comments, opinions, or ideas for interviews, Give me a call, 760-742-4200, or you can email me at 91.3@paulatribe.com. And this is Eric Tega saying, Ichang.